What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. This is your host, Brandon DeCruz, and today is episode 101, where we're going to discuss the topic of the nutritional factors and dietary decisions driving you to overeat. And this is going to be part one in a series on how to reduce the chance or the likelihood of overeating. So two episodes ago, in episode 99 of the show, I covered the topics of how to get back on track after slipping up on your nutrition. And I went over different topics and subjects such as why some individuals tend to slip up off their nutrition more than others, how I react and respond when clients do fall off plan, and how I help them work through the process. I went through what to do after a slip up, especially in context of how to determine why it happened and what can be learned so that we can move forward and make progress after a slip up occurs. I went over troubleshooting techniques and strategies to help with mitigating slip ups and also learning from them. I spoke about how to minimize the likelihood of slipping up in the future. And then also I spoke about what to do after a slip up, like how to get back on track, especially in the context of like a weekend slip up, because this podcast goes out on Fridays, but I know that the vast majority of individuals, the time in which they struggle most with their nutrition is on the weekend. So this is something that many people, when they're coming into Monday and into the start of a new week, it's something that's on their mind. They've slipped up in the past or slipped up on the weekend, and it's kind of lingering on with them and really causing guilt, as well as questioning their ability to make the progress they desire. So that was a podcast that I just recently released, but also it generated a lot of positive feedback, as slipping up on your diet and struggling to get back on track with your nutrition is a situation that the vast majority of individuals have encountered and dealt with in the past. And it's something those of you out there will most likely experience in the future. However, there are those who struggle with the process of physique transformation and lifestyle change more than others. And there are many who find themselves in a situation where when they slip up on their diet, it ends up snowballing. And one slip up leads to multiple slip ups. And it's almost like things go downhill. From one event, it dominoes and it has a cascading effect. And this often results in overeating, which can not only derail your body composition progress, but it can also negatively impact your level of self-efficacy, the belief you have in your ability to reach a specific body composition goal. And it can also negatively impact your metabolic health and quality of life, especially if these overeating occasions go unchecked and unaddressed, and they lead to the addition of excess body fat. So in this week's episode of the show, I want to cover the topic of overeating, which overeating encompasses a multiple forms of eating behaviors. So this can include emotional eating. This could include binging. This could be mindless eating or even snacking behaviors. And I want to go through what are some of the key factors that can lead you to overeat and what to do about these, as overeating is a behavior that many in society today engage in on a regular basis. And it's one of the reasons why so many people struggle with their weight and with being able to positively change their body composition, especially due to the impacts that overeating can have on both weight gain and fat gain. Now, it's well known that the main factor that predisposes us towards gaining weight over time is being in a state of positive energy balance, where the amount of calories we consume exceeds the amount of calories we burn. Now, this can be done through a multitude of ways, but one of the most common ways that people gain weight and fat over time is due to engaging in habits that increase their total calorie intake, such as overeating. Due to how common overeating is, we're in a situation where adults tend to gain weight progressively throughout middle age. Now, research on this topic finds that most adults gain weight at an average of 0.5 to 1 kilogram, which equates to 1.1 to 2.2 pounds per year during adulthood, which adds up to around 11 to 22 pounds gained per decade. We also see that the average daily calorie intake in the US has increased by approximately 218 calories per day, according to research done by Kevin Hall of the NIH in the 2010s. And that number is most likely even higher in 2023, especially as we see the obesity epidemic continue to rise in terms of the prevalence of obesity, especially in the United States. And this just shows how both our calorie intake and our weight and fat mass are going up over time. As a result of this increase in fat mass that many are experiencing as a result of overeating, more and more individuals are in a state of poor metabolic health. So a recent 2022 study on the metabolic health of US adults found that when looking at markers such as body fat, blood glucose levels, blood lipids, aka your cholesterol profile, and blood pressure, 93.2% of Americans were in a state of poor metabolic health, which essentially just leaves 6.8% of Americans that have optimal metabolic health. So this is a very small minority of individuals that actually have optimized their internal health and their metabolic health. And based on the data that they collected within this analysis, and what they analyzed, the average American is on the verge of being pre-diabetic based on their fasting blood glucose readings as well as their HbA1c. This data set also found that over the last 20-year period, there have been other significant changes to our body composition and our metabolic health, including significant increases in adiposity, aka body fat, and significant increases in our blood glucose levels. Now, this isn't to say that people aren't trying to lose fat and improve their body composition and health, as many do try to diet each and every year to lose weight. So, for example, a recent systematic review and meta-analysis found that between 42 to 61% of adults in general populations around the world report trying to lose weight each year. But we see that most people are generally good at losing some amount of weight. As you know, when it comes down to it, around 6 out of 7 individuals that go on a diet will lose a significant amount of weight. However, what we tend to be terrible at is maintaining that weight loss. So despite the fact that many will lose a significant amount of fat and weight, up to 95% of those individuals will regain what they lost after the diet has ended. So when looking at all these factors, it's clear that engaging in overeating is a habit that is not only hindering the body composition progress many are working towards making, but in many instances, it's actually leading to regression, as many are gaining body fat and body weight over time and frustrated about the fact that they're unable to achieve the physique they desire and maximize their potential in the process. So before we get into the factors that can lead to overeating, I want to cover what overeating is and just how common it is. When most people think about the concept of overeating, they look at it as this like gluttonous behavior or gluttonous activity, and they often envision a situation where someone is just stuffing their face with food and indulging excessively. And although that is one form of overeating, overeating can come in multiple forms, including things like binge eating, but it can also include eating behaviors such as emotional eating, where these are behaviors where you're essentially trying to cope with food. It can encompass stress eating, snacking, and mindless eating. So in reality, overeating is any situation where you eat far in excess of your calorie needs and your intake is way over your nutritional and macro targets, which leads to a situation where your calorie intake, your food choices, your eating behaviors, and your eating habits aren't in alignment with your body composition and/or health goals. And with the vast majority of clients I work with, I often find that the most common form of overeating they engage in falls under the category of mindless eating, where a lack of awareness around the food choices they're making, the importance of tracking all calorie-containing items they consume, and/or eating in a distracted manner leads them to consuming far more calories than they intended to and going far in excess of both their calorie and macro targets, which often can lead to a slowing of progress. And if done frequently enough or to a large enough degree, it can halt their progress and make it seem like they're completely plateaued, which is extremely frustrating. Now, this is the type of overeating behavior we can engage in intentionally, but in many situations, I find that my clients aren't intending to consume more calories than their physique goal requires. However, a lack of awareness around their decisions around food choices and a lack of mindfulness when tracking their nutrition leads to a situation where they're underestimating the amount of calories they're taking in each day, and they're actually overeating on a frequent basis, which is what leads to slowing down their rate of progress. And this is something that's especially common during a fat loss phase. And mistracking your intake and underestimating how many calories you're eating is one of the most common reasons for a fat loss plateau. Encountering a situation where an individual is unintentionally and unknowingly overeating and isn't making progress they desire is not only something I frequently encounter, but it's also something that's been heavily investigated in the scientific literature, which finds that one of the primary reasons people either struggle to lose weight in the first place or to actually keep that weight off that they do lose is due to incorrectly estimating their daily energy intake. So, for example, in one study, researchers looked at individuals who claimed to be diet resistant, and they had believed that they didn't have the ability to lose weight, as they reported, believing that they either had a slow metabolism or a metabolic issue like hypothyroidism, or essentially a downregulated thyroid, which they believed was the issue that was causing them to be unable to lose weight. So, to test this, researchers took the group of individuals who claimed to be diet resistant and reported that they were eating a low amount of calories for a prolonged period of time, yet were still unable to lose weight. And they compared them against a control group who did not have a reported history of diet resistance or did not have any issues losing weight. And those in the diet resistant group all reported that they were eating less than 1,200 calories per day, yet were still unable to lose weight. So researchers decided to start the study off by measuring all aspects of both groups' total daily energy expenditure, including their metabolic rate and their thermic effect of feeding, to see if those who claimed to be diet resistant did in fact have a lower than predicted metabolic rate or a suppressed total daily energy expenditure as compared to those in the control group who had no history of having issues losing weight. And when comparing the diet resistant group against the control group, they actually found that the diet resistance group's total daily energy expenditure was about 4% higher than those in the control group. So they were actually burning more calories per day than even those in the control group that didn't report having any metabolic issues or did not have any trouble losing weight previously. Then, when testing the metabolic rate and thermic effect of feeding between both the diet resistant group and the control group, they found that there was no significant differences between the two groups. And in actuality, those in the diet group or the diet resistant group had a slightly higher metabolic rate and higher thermic effect of feeding. So their lack of weight loss was not due to having any metabolic issues. The researchers also tracked all participants' calorie intake and calorie expenditure using gold standard assessment measurements, including indirect calorimetry and doubly labeled water. And they did this for a 2 week long period to get exact measurements of what they were truly eating calorie wise and burning in terms of calories from physical activity and exercise per day. And when researchers compared these participants' actual daily calorie intakes compared to the less than 1200 calorie intake they claimed to be eating daily, they found that those in the diet resistant group underestimated their calorie intake by an average of 47% per day, which meant that they were overeating by close to 1100 calories per day, more than what they thought. So although they thought they were eating a little over 1000 calories per day, they were eating well over 2000 calories per day. So in reality, the reason these individuals weren't losing weight wasn't due to being diet resistant or wasn't due to having a metabolic issue like a slow metabolism or a thyroid disorder. It was that they were overeating calories in comparison to their calorie expenditure on a daily basis. And although they thought they were in a deficit and should be losing weight, they were eating far above the calorie intake that they would need to maintain to effectively lose body fat and lose body weight. The next topic I want to cover are the factors that increase our likelihood of overeating. There are a variety of factors that influence our calorie intake and the likelihood we overeat. And broadly speaking, we can separate these out into two different categories. So today we're going to cover the first category, which is the nutritional factors, which include our food selection and overall diet quality, the palatability of the foods we eat, and also the processing level of those foods, and whether or not we make up our foods of whole foods or processed foods. And then in a subsequent episode, so next week's episode, I'll go over more of the lifestyle factors, including how our environment and what we're exposed to influences our likelihood to overeat, our stress levels, our sleep quantity and quality, and various factors like that. And so on today's podcast, I'm going to go through part one, which is going to be all nutrition related and really going over a lot of the nutritional factors and dietary decisions and how those influence the likelihood whether we overeat or we can stick to our calorie budget and reach our physique goals. And this is very influential because a lot of times people aren't realizing how the decisions that they make on a daily basis are impacting their not only their satiety and their ability to manage calories within a meal, but also throughout the time course of a day, and also, how one day compounds on another. So we're going to go through all these factors and really get into the nuances from a nutritional perspective to be able to guide you guys in the right direction to reduce the likelihood of overeating. And also make it so that you can be more successful with your ability to adhere and stick to your diet, which is ultimately what's going to underpin your ability to successfully transform and improve your body composition. First, let's cover how our food choice selection and overall diet quality impacts our eating behaviors, our total calorie intake, and likelihood to overeat. When it comes to managing our calorie intake, one of the most important aspects we need to focus on are the food choices we make and the types of food we comprise our diet of, as our food choices and the overall quality of our diet can make or break our ability to manage our hunger and appetite, which are important components that we need to manage in order to make our diet sustainable so that we can consistently nail our nutritional targets, stay on track, and reach our goals. The main mistake many make when constructing a diet is in the foods they select and make their diet up of, many of which aren't conducive to the goal of increasing satiety and actually managing hunger, which often lead these individuals to struggle with their hunger and to be more likely to veer off their diet and overconsume calories as a result. And if you look at the average person's diet, many of the choices they make in terms of their food choice selection come down to their taste preferences and convenience, which is why the vast majority of individuals include a ton of ultra-processed and/or hyper-palatable foods into their diet, as these are items that taste great and are convenient to not only buy, as they're literally stockpiled in every single grocery mart around the world, but they're also super convenient from an accessibility perspective in terms of they're super easy to eat. And the issue with how many approach food selection is they only think about the here and now, and this is something that most of us are guilty of, not only from a nutritional perspective, but almost in all aspects of our life. We value our present self more than our future selves. So often what ends up happening is we make decisions based off what is convenient or what we want in the moment without considering how that decision will impact us in our future. And this is a concept referred to as delayed discounting, which means that we discount and/or devalue things that are going to happen to us in the future relative to the things that are happening to us right now, such as discounting our need or the benefit or the importance of sticking to our calorie budget in order to reach our goal of losing fat in the future for the hunger that we're experiencing right now in the moment. And delay discounting is extremely applicable to how many go about their food choice and diet quality, as often many decide what they're going to eat in a meal based on what they desire in that moment, what's convenient for them to eat, and what their taste preferences are. However, this approach to nutrition is what leads many to put themselves in a situation where they have access to highly processed and hyperpalatable foods, which they end up overeating, which hinders their physique and health progress and moves them further away from their body composition related goals and the version of themselves that they want to achieve. Now, when most people hear the term ultra processed foods, they automatically think of fast food and junk foods, which are, you know, types of ultra processed foods. But there are many foods that fall under the classification of ultra processed foods that many fail to realize. So for many out there, they may not even realize just how many ultra-processed foods that they're taking in on a frequent basis. And the primary method of recognizing if a food is ultra-processed or not is to look at the label and scan over the list of ingredients it contains, which is something you guys can easily do when you're in the grocery store or when you're ordering groceries. Just look at the label. And so ultra-processed foods, from a technical perspective, are formulated from substances isolated from whole foods, where non-culinary ingredients and additives are added to these whole foods. And these usually include combinations of salt, sugar or starch, oils and refined fats, and other food additives. And ultra-processed foods generally contain five or more ingredients in their formulas and will have additives such as hydrogenated oil, modified starch, especially like modified corn starch, artificial colors and flavors, and emulsifiers. And they generally have ingredients you can't pronounce and will have a long ingredient list on the label. Next, I want to cover why and how choosing processed foods increase our calorie intake and the likelihood that we engage in overeating and we overconsume calories. Now, there's a multitude of reasons as to why processed foods drive what's referred to as passive overconsumption, which is a process in which we consume more calories than we intended to due to the fact that these food choices and food sources are calorie dense, yet they're not satiating. So we end up eating more calories of these processed foods to try to get full than we would if we were eating whole food sources. If you think back to every time you found yourself overeating and slipping off your diet, many of you will realize that the vast majority of times that you've been in a situation where you've overconsumed calories, the food sources you've overconsumed haven't been whole unrefined food sources like lean protein sources, fruits and vegetables. I can't say in the 11 years that I've been nutrition coaching, I've ever had a client that said, "Coach, I slipped up and I overate chicken breasts," or, you know, "I overate, you know, I had pounds and pounds of strawberries." Like, that's generally never the case. These overeating instances most often occur in a meal or eating occasion, which involve hyperpalatable processed foods, which are extremely tasty and hard to moderate your intake of. And this is because processed foods are far more likely to be overeaten than whole foods. So you're much more likely to eat an excess amount of calories when you pop open a bag of potato chips than you would if you sat down to a plate of boiled potatoes. Now, there are many reasons as to why you're more likely to overeat when consuming and choosing processed foods as compared to when you sit down for a meal and you make your dietary decisions centering around whole food sources. So first, processed foods provide less satiety per calorie as compared to whole food sources, yet they're much more calorie dense. So for every gram or bite of processed food you eat, you're consuming far more calories than you would if you ate the same amount of food weight from whole food sources. Processed foods are also hyperpalatable, which make them more seductive and harder to moderate our consumption of due to the fact that they're highly rewarding and they cause a much larger spike in dopamine, which drives us to eat more of them, which is how processed foods dysregulate our ability to regulate our appetite and hunger and manage our calorie intake. Another massive component of why we tend to eat more calories when eating processed foods than whole foods is because processed foods have less of the food properties that cause us to get full and more of the food properties that cause us to overeat. So let me expand on that a little bit further. When we look at food, there are certain food properties that are most associated with feelings of satiety and managing hunger. And these are a high water content and those foods that provide a lot of food volume, which helps to expand our stomach and initiate a satiety signal to be sent to the brain to terminate a meal, Another component or food property is a high protein or fiber content, both of which help to increase feelings of satiety. And also, when we look at the calorie density, foods that are highly satiating have a low calorie density, meaning they contain less calories per gram or per bite of food eaten. So we can essentially consume more total food for less total calories. Now, processed foods are literally at the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes down to all those food properties, when we look at what they contain, they're very calorie dense, meaning they're packed with calories for a small amount of food weight. They contain little to no water, so they don't help us feel full when consuming them. And they're far lower in protein and fiber content. Yet, they're packed with sugar, salt, and fat, which all increase their palatability and can cause us to be driven to eat far more. And this is why if you compare two food sources with the same origin or the same food base, and you take a whole food version of them and compare them against a processed food version of them, you'll realize that in almost every single instance, the processed food version is far less satiating and more likely for you to overeat. So easy ways to think about this would be to think about some of these comparisons in your mind. So let's take the same base food. So we're going to look at a potato and let's compare how much you would eat in French fries, which are fried with oil and, you know, hyperpalatable, super delicious, versus a baked plain potato. Another example would be looking at fried chicken tenders or chicken wings or any deviation of chicken nuggets, any of those things, versus a grilled chicken breast. And another example would be a fast food cheeseburger versus a sirloin steak. In every instance, the processed food version of these foods are far less satiating and more likely to be overeaten, as most of us wouldn't go for seconds on a baked potato, a chicken breast, or a steak, but many will eat an entire plate of French fries or chicken tenders or multiple cheeseburgers at a fast food joint. Processed foods are also softer and easier to eat, which causes us to consume more calories, many more calories per minute. An eating rate in and of itself is something which research has shown can impact our total calorie intake, as it's not like we just get full just from hitting a specific calorie target, which is really important to realize. Your body and your brain is not receiving or not quick enough to receive the information of how many calories you're eating in the exact moment. Satiety within a meal is something that takes time for our brain to register. So if we're eating more calories per minute with one food compared to another food, we're going to end up consuming more calories within that meal than we would if we ate a whole food source, which would require us to eat slower and chew more thoroughly. And this is something that's been tested out in the research. So for example, some studies show that a 20% change in eating rate or the speed of eating in a meal can increase our calorie intake anywhere between 10 to 15%, which is something that can easily be done when consuming processed foods. So overall, when we compare a meal made up of processed foods versus whole foods, we're more likely to overconsume calories and eat more of the meal containing processed foods. Due to the fact that processed foods have a higher energy density, meaning more calories per gram, they provide greater food reward, which drives us to engage in that process of passive overconsumption. They have a lower protein content, so they're less satiating. They generally feature a combination of high fat, starch, and/or sugar and salt, which increase the palatability of these foods. They have a lower fiber content, which causes processed foods to have a lower thermic effect of feeding, less satiety, and they also have a higher metabolizable energy content or calorie content, meaning we absorb more calories from low fiber foods than we do in comparison to high fiber foods. And they're easier to consume and eat a large quantity of, which results in less chewing and less overall satiety. So if you're someone who finds themselves, and you find yourself struggling to manage your appetite and having difficulty sticking to a diet and to the calorie budget target required to reach your body composition goals, I highly encourage you to look into the food sources you're consuming on a daily basis and to shift your food choices to being predominantly made up of high quality, nutrient dense whole food sources such as lean proteins, vegetables, fruits, whole grains and root tubers like potatoes, carrots, things of that sort, so that you feel more satiated per meal and you're better able to suppress your hunger and consistently hit your calorie targets. The next topic I want to cover is how food palatability, or how pleasurable your foods are, impacts your eating behaviors and your drive to eat. Now, when most people think about losing or gaining fat, they think about it, and this is something I have often conversations about, but they're literally just looking at it as a math equation. So it's purely physiological perspective, and they're just considering calories in and calories out. And that is the physiology of fat loss. And although this is the key fundamental principle that governs weight change, I also believe it's important to consider some of the psychological aspects of dieting and eating and what affects the amount of food we consume and how that impacts whether we're able to lose fat and get the body composition goals we want. And so one of the biggest factors that impacts how many calories we eat and whether and our drive to eat, as well as how we respond to foods from a psychological perspective, and ultimately downstream, whether we're able to lose fat or not, is the palatability of the foods we consume. Now, palatability simply refers to the tastiness and the hedonic reward, or the pleasure response that we get from the foods we ingest. And the level of palatability of the foods we eat has a massive impact on the total amount of calories we eat, how satiated we feel, or how little satiety we get from these meals, and the pleasure response that we get from ingesting certain foods. When you consume hyperpalatable foods, which are tasty and often seem irresistible, they increase the drive to eat more of these foods, which makes controlling your appetite, managing your cravings, and sticking to a diet extremely difficult, and much more difficult than it would be if you selected less palatable foods. And up until the last few years, we actually didn't have a scientific definition for palatable foods, despite how prevalent they are in today's food environment and how readily accessible they are to each and every one of us. So for decades, we've known some of the effects of these foods, in terms of what do hyperpalatable foods cause us to engage in. We know that they're involved in hedonic eating behaviors, so driving for a pleasure or eating for a pleasure response. They cause a pleasure response, which drives both our liking and wanting of these foods in the future. And they drive passive overconsumption, which is the process of eating far in excess of what we intended to. And if you really think about it, we've all been there. We say that we're going to try one cookie in a platter, and we end up eating the entire thing. So in 2019, scientists within the fields of psychological research, as well as food science, looked into creating a working definition and criteria for objectively identifying hyperpalatable foods. And what they came up with, based on the scientific literature and their analyses of everything going on within the food environment, is that hyperpalatable foods are a combination of palatability-inducing nutrients that provide us with a high rewarding eating experience that often leads to a greater calorie intake within a meal or eating occasion. And these foods also have a reinforcing value where they increase our wanting for that food and desire and drive to overconsume it. So researchers have also used the USDA's Food and Nutrient Database for dietary studies, which represents the U.S. food supply. And they found that 62% of the foods available in the U.S. food supply today are considered hyperpalatable. So they're extremely prevalent and abundant in our modern food environment, and they make up a considerable percentage of the average person's diet. Now, there are a few common characteristics of hyperpalatable foods that result in why we tend to overeat them. First, they're high in energy or calorie density, meaning they have a lot of calories per gram and provide little food volume and fullness despite being packed with calories. So we end up having to consume more in terms of weight of these foods to receive a fullness or a satiety response. And so as a result of having to consume more food weight, we consume more calories because it's more calories per gram. They're usually highly processed, and they're often highly refined food sources that leverage advances in modern food science to increase our intake and consumption of these foods. And due to these characteristics, hyperpalatable foods are the category of foods that many struggle the most with moderating their consumption of, and why many tend to overeat calories when including these types of foods into their diet. And this is one of the main reasons I'm always driving home the importance of food quality and food selection, especially when the goal is fat loss. As you can have the right calorie and macro targets to effectively drop body fat, but if you're comprising your diet full of processed foods and hyperpalatable foods, which result in you experiencing excess levels of hunger and a higher likelihood of overconsuming calories, it'll lead to a situation where you end up eating back and erasing your calorie deficit and slow down or even stall your fat loss progress. And the overconsumption of calories, especially in the form of hyperpalatable processed foods, is one of the number one reasons so many people are at a higher body fat percentage than they desire and that is healthy for them, and also why so many people struggle to lose fat and especially with keeping it off. And the issue is, in today's modern food environment, we have unlimited access to cheap, refined, and highly processed hyperpalatable food sources, which increase our drive to eat these items and overconsume calories, thus resulting in body fat gain and decrements and negative impacts upon our metabolic health. And I often consult with new clients who come to me and say that they don't know why they can't control themselves when they eat certain foods or when they're around certain foods or when they're exposed to certain foods. And 9 out of 10 times, the foods that they end up reporting that they have the most trouble controlling and limiting their intake of happen to be hyperpalatable foods. And the reason why so many of us struggle with moderating our intake of hyperpalatable foods is due to the impacts they have on our food reward centers. The hyperpalatable foods we're exposed to now cause such a heightened dopamine response that they reinforce overeating behaviors and drive overconsumption of these stimulating foods. And so Research finds that hyperpalatable foods, particularly those rich in added fat and sugar, are potent rewards that promote overeating even in the absence of a need for energy or need for calories, or in the absence of true physiological hunger. And these, consuming these foods have been shown to trigger learned associations between the stimulus, aka the tasty food you eat, and the reward, aka the dopamine response we receive when eating these foods. And so, in evolutionary terms, this reinforcing and reward property of palatable foods used to be advantageous because it ensured that back in like the evolutionary times, that food was eaten when available, enabling that food, that those calories, to be stored in the form of body fat for future need in environments where food sources were scarce or unreliable. However, in today's modern society, where food is widely available, this adaptation has become a liability, especially when it comes to those of us who have body composition and health goals. So when it comes to the palatability of the food sources you make your diet up of, the tastier a food is, the more of it you'll eat at a meal, and the more likely you'll be to have a higher drive, craving, and desire to consume more of these food sources later, which can quickly become a slippery slope as it can cause many individuals to overconsume calories to an excessive degree, which is what we're going to cover next. So next, I want to cover the significant impact eating processed foods has on your likelihood to overeat and gain body fat, and go over some of the best research we have on this topic, as this can have a massive impact on your ability to control your calorie intake and improve your body composition. So over the last few decades, we've seen an association between the increased consumption of ultra-processed and hyperpalatable foods and rates of weight gain and the prevalence of individuals developing either overweight and/or obesity. Now, when we look at the evidence that examines the relationship between ultra-processed foods and hyperpalatable foods and calorie intake, it's clear that including these foods in our diet significantly drives up our calorie intake on a consistent basis. And that's why studies where they've exposed participants to diets consisting of ultra-processed and/or palatable foods result in significant fat gain, even when these studies are only done over a short period of time. So first, I'm going to cover a study by Dr. Kevin Hall of the National Institute of Health, which looked at the effect of diet quality and on body composition and body fat outcomes. And this study was designed to tease out these specific effects that different levels of food processing and food quality would have on an individual's body composition, their body fat levels, their calorie intake, and their satiety levels when everything was controlled and accounted for, and they were able to track all of the body composition changes in every calorie consumed over a specific period of time. In order to test and study this, they took weight-stable men and women and had them live in a metabolic ward lab for 4 weeks where all of their meals were provided to them and every single calorie and macro they ate was monitored and tracked by the researchers. They also monitored their body weight, their body fat levels, which was done through DEXA, their appetite levels, and their subjective scores on the palatability of the different diets. And this study used what's referred to as a crossover design, which essentially means that each participant went on both diets. So what they did was they split people into two groups, where one group consumed a processed food diet and the other group consumed a whole foods diet for 2 weeks. And then what they would do is they would switch them to the opposite diet. So each participant within the study went on each diet for a period of 2 weeks. During each diet condition, they were told to eat to satiety or to fullness. So that was the only direction. They weren't forced to eat. They were at their own ability to choose exactly how much they eat in each specific meal. Now, what's interesting about this study is that they matched the calorie, the protein, the fat, carb, fiber, sugar, and sodium content, and the palatability levels of both diets. So the only difference was one diet was made up predominantly of highly processed foods, whereas the other diet was made up mostly of unprocessed food sources. They tightly controlled all aspects of the diet that were given to each that were given in each condition because they wanted to isolate the potential differences in diets down to just the level of food processing that these foods had undergone, rather than just comparing 2 weeks of eating a junk food diet versus 2 weeks of eating a whole foods diet. The results found that when participants were on the processed diet condition, they ate an average of over 500 calories more per day each and every single day of the study, compared to when those same individuals were in the unprocessed diet and this additional. When they looked at it from an analysis perspective, this additional intake came just from additional carbs and fats. So when they were on the unprocessed diet, or when they were on the processed diet, they ate 500 calories more per day, or actually more than 500 calories more per day, just of carbs and fats. As a result of this increase in calories that they consumed during the processed food condition, these participants gained a significant amount of body fat and body weight, gaining over 2 pounds during the 2 weeks they were on the unprocessed diet. However, When they went on to the opposite diet, so when they were on the whole foods diet condition, they lost around 2 pounds as well, despite the fact that in both conditions they ate to fullness. So on the processed foods diet, they had to consume 500 plus calories more per day to feel full, and they gained fat as a result. Yet when they ate mostly whole foods, they were able to get just as full and satiated, but they were eating more than 500 calories less per day, and they unintentionally lost weight in the process. Now, the interesting aspect of this study is that they matched all aspects of both diets, and participants rated both diets the same in terms of palatability and taste. And even despite this, these participants ate more than 500 calories more per day. So imagine if they hadn't matched all aspects of the diet, because think about it in the real world. When one of us selects more processed foods, these foods are much more hyperpalatable, which is known to drive up calorie intake and cause passive overeating. They have less protein and less fiber content, which makes them less satiating. And they have much higher sugar, fat, and salt content, which increases our drive to eat more of these items. So unlike in this metabolic ward study, where they had a metabolic kitchen, which allowed them to design and tightly control all aspects of the diets and equate the macros and the food properties between both the processed and the unprocessed diets, when one of us eats processed foods, we don't have the benefit of having them be made in the lab to be similar in terms of their macro composition and their palatability as whole foods are. So we're much more likely to eat way more than 500 calories more per day just to feel satiated and feel full in comparison to the design of the study, which even so, it shows you the significant impact that processing or processed foods can have on our ad libitum food intake. So essentially the amount of food that we need to eat to feel full. Now, in this study, we see that eating a diet comprised of more processed food significantly increases calorie intake and increases the likelihood for fat gain. And this was seen when palatability and taste were matched between dietary conditions. However, eating hyperpalatable foods has been shown to have an even greater influence on our calorie intake and our likelihood of fat gain than even just processed foods alone. Because keep in mind that in the Kevin Hall study, they equated palatability. So that was not an independent variable driving this increased energy intake. Now, we have research dating back to the 90s that finds that the amount of hyperpalatable foods we expose ourselves to, we keep in our food environment, and we have access to can drastically influence our drive to overeat and consume way more calories, which leads to fat gain. So for example, in a study by Ravison and colleagues, they had healthy men come into a lab and stay there for a week to conduct a metabolic ward study. And the purpose of this study was to measure the participants' calorie intake and eating behaviors over the course of a week when exposed to a larger variety of food. And we actually know independently that increases in food variety, so the more variety you have within your diet, the more likely you are to consume more calories. So this was kind of, their thought process when approaching this. And so throughout the week that these participants stayed in lab, they had access to a large variety of foods, including entrees and meals, prepackaged snacks, soft drinks. And the underlying component of this was that many of these items were processed or they were palatable food items, essentially. So they were tasty. And throughout the course of the study, they tracked every single calorie each man ate by using a machine that logged every item each participant ordered and how much of it they finished, so they could account for each participant's calorie intake and exactly how much it changed over their maintenance calorie intake, which they had analyzed beforehand. What's interesting about this study is that it was not a diet intervention study, nor was it an overfeeding study. So subjects were able to self-select their food choices and how much or how little they ate each and every day. And all they were instructed to do was to eat to fullness. So eat until the point at which you're full and then stop after. Now, by the end of the 1 week study, researchers found that subjects ate an average of 173% over their maintenance calorie needs and ended up gaining an average of over 5 pounds just within a week. Now, this research group also replicated this study in a group of women and found very similar results in terms of these women eating a significant amount of calories over their maintenance calorie intake and gaining body fat quickly in the process. And this massive increase in calories and weight gain experienced by both the men and women in these trials is due to the fact that highly palatable food sources are more rewarding and drive consumption, and they're also more calorie dense and less satiating. So the more palatable a food is, the less full we get from it. So we'll need to eat more to get satiated from it, which is why we tend to overeat when we select foods that are either highly palatable or they're highly processed. Now, the last topic I want to cover today is how making poor choices in your food selection can increase the likelihood of you overeating and blowing your calorie budget during a fat loss phase. One of the most common nutritional mistakes many make during their fat loss phases is with the food choices they select and the food choices that they make their diet up of. And oftentimes, many individuals will start a dieting phase and will keep a lot of the same foods that they've been eating previously within their diet. So a lot of times they're keeping a lot of the tasty, hyperpalatable foods they enjoy in their diet. And they'll create a deficit by focusing mostly on just reducing their portion sizes. So they're essentially taking the same diet that they have, and they're just making smaller portions to induce that deficit. And although this is an approach that can create a deficit, the fact that these foods aren't satiating and actually stimulate appetite lead many to feeling excessive hunger and not being able to consistently maintain a calorie deficit, which causes them to see a slowing of progress. They also see stalls, and a lot of times they encounter fat loss plateaus as a result of being unable to maintain the deficit they created. So they're lacking consistency and adherence to the diet as a result of the increase in hunger and appetite that they're experiencing. And the issue with this approach is that the longer we diet and the leaner we get, the more metabolic adaptations we face. So our energy expenditure and our NEAT levels significantly decrease, which will significantly reduce the amount of calories we can eat and, lose fat on, because essentially your maintenance calories are lowering. We see that our leptin levels go down, which lower our satiety levels and the fullness we feel from our regular meals. And the hunger hormones like ghrelin go up, which make us experience more hunger. Now, all of these adaptations make fat loss more difficult because now you're burning less calories per day, which can eat away at the deficit you initially created, which is further compounded by the fact that you're now also hungrier. So if you're trying to fit in fun foods and just cutting the portion size of them down, the amount of food volume you're taking in per meal continues to go down just to maintain a calorie deficit. But at the same time, your hunger is also steadily increasing, not only due to the fact that you're losing body fat and lowering leptin levels, but also the fact that the food sources that you're making your diet up of are not satiating. And now, due to the fact that you haven't prioritized high satiety, low calorie density foods, which provide a lot of bang for your buck in terms of the food volume and satiety you can get from them, you now experience even greater hunger levels, less fullness, and you're more likely to fall off your diet. And seeing as hunger is one of the main reasons as to why many people struggle with dieting, and why many dieters either don't lose the fat they desire or they can't maintain a leaner physique after the diet is done, if you're not dialing in the food quality, aspect of your diet and choosing foods that are more conducive for your goals, you're actually doing yourself a disservice as you're making a process that's already challenging even more brutal and less favorable and less likely to be successful by not being intentional and selective about the food choices you make. So overall, nutritional factors like your food choice selection, diet quality, and whether or not you include a ton of processed and hyperpalatable foods in your diet can either make or break the likelihood that you struggle with overeating and that you'll be able to manage your calorie budget and reach your physique goals as a result of being consistent with your nutrition. As always, guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Chasing Clarity podcast. If you need anything from me, whether that be one-on-one coaching or Zoom consultations, feel free to reach out to me on my email, which is bdecruzfitness@gmail.com, or you can find me on my Instagram, which is @BrandonDeCruz_. Also, guys, please remember to follow the show on Spotify or iTunes, leave us a review, and then also be sure to share the episode on your stories so we can continue to reach more listeners, really, because the intention behind this show is to have a positive ripple effect on this industry. My goal is, and has always been, to bridge the gap between research and information and practical application so that all of you listeners out there can look better, feel better, and function better, and live a life that includes walking around with a better body composition and a mindset of abundance. So if you could share the show with others who could benefit from the information that I provided, it'd be much appreciated. Guys, enjoy your weekend. Peace.